From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
This Wednesday edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Palm, Neil McCready, Clark Ford Studio this morning after our final summer hiatus the last 2 days as I was in Washington, D.C. Quick final vacation before we get started. Ole Miss Media Day for football is tomorrow afternoon, so camp is here. That we'll look at the schedule in a little bit, too. I don't have it off the top of my head, but I know tomorrow there's a viewing op, but no interviews on Friday, and then I think we return on Tuesday of next week with
that's correct.
So
that is accurate.
Yes, that's what I thought. So we will talk some football today. Also, while I was in Washington, I met with Ole Miss grad and deputy press secretary, assistant to the president, Hogan Gidley. He gives me about a half hour, pretty cool deal. We did the interview from the West Wing of the White House on Saturday night, just prior to Trump getting back to his residence from Bedminster, I believe, is where he was over the weekend. So, good bit with Hogan, his rise through his media career. Talk a little about Ole Miss as well, what brought him to Oxford, his memories and such. So, about a half hour with Hogan coming up. And I've already got head on someone on Twitter. Guys, this is a localized story about someone who has excelled to the top of their career. This is not political. He's obviously going to mention some political topics during the course of this this podcast interview, but just spare me, if you will. That is not what this is about. If he were a Democrat, we'd do the exact same freaking interview. So that is where we are this morning.
Or would you? Would you have? Are you sure?
That's what's funny is how all of a sudden over the weekend I became a card-carrying member of the Republican Party, because I mean I've been on this side for a really long time. Really, I mean my history says that I was getting Make America Great Again hats, and I was all in. Over
what does your shirt say? So. Build that wall. Yeah, is that what it says?
Souvenirs. Yeah. Souvenirs.
God, that's. Just,
I mean, I had to buy some stuff while I was in Washington. Right?
Just looks harsh.
I know. I mean. Got those Trump socks with the head on them, you know, wear with suits for football games here in the country.
Are those children on the other side of the wall? What are you? What is on that shirt? My God.
So anyway, we'll get to Hogan here.
The sleeve says your family doesn't matter to me. I mean, it is insane. I'm offended.
There was a lot of that that paraphernalia for sale, though, over the course of the week.
You don't say.
Yes, the street vendors have some imaginations. I'll put it that way as we walked around D.C. But, again, Hogan here in a little bit. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about football and some.
What is your cap? MAGA?
MAGA.
Your cap?
Yeah.
MAGA. Oh, it's one of those caps. Sorry.
One of those caps.
Sorry. Whoops.
Yeah.
Carry on.
Oxford Exxon, Highway 6 West in Oxford, Speed Pass Plus. That saves you money. That saves you time. It's efficient. It's easy. Don't have to worry about credit card skimming or identity theft either with Speed Pass Plus at any Blue Sky location in Mississippi. Go in, get a daiquiri, $3.99, 44 ounces if you so wish as well. And again, coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio.
We are Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900. Call that number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you are looking for. He's going to send you a quote. There's no hassle. There's no haggle. It's just easy. You tell him what you're looking for, he'll send you a quote. You get that quote, and the rest is kind of up to you. You can shop it around if you like. You're going to end up coming back to Corey because he's going to get you right to the bottom line, right from the beginning. You get phenomenal service after the sale, delivery options, all of those things that the typical car dealer really doesn't do for you. Corey will. It's just kind of part of his just base care, if you will. So, again, call the number, get the quote, get your vehicle, and then make it even better. At the end of your deal, tell Corey that you heard about Clark Ford on the podcast. You can mention this podcast. Mention any of our other family of podcasts. Assault Verbal is going to drop later today. Russell and I taped with Chad Simmons yesterday. So a lot of recruiting going on. You can mention that. It's $500 off your bottom line from Clark Ford and Amory, 662-257-1900.
Yeah, you know, Neil, I mean, given our location for the show on Saturday, I really missed an opportunity. I did not hashtag Taterlog Podcast as I promoted the episode on the Twitter machine. So I missed a little opportunity there, but
I claimed it on Twitter.
Did you?
I claimed that opportunity. Okay. I just said it wasn't bad for a Potato Log Podcast.
Yeah, you know, so.
You know.
But nonetheless, really, really cool. Hogan, an incredibly nice guy. I mean, one of the best people you meet. We've known him for a long time. Over the course of these podcasts, I think he was on here for inauguration. Maybe was it inauguration when for Trump? When last time he was on the show before this?
I think so. That sounds right. Right.
He did a beer garden with us in studio back in the day when he was in town for something.
He did
with you and Jeffrey, I believe.
That was before he was big time.
He was, at that point, I think he was an analyst for Fox and CBS. He also was the communications guy for the Rick Santorum campaign in 2012 when Santorum won 13 states, including the Iowa caucus, early on, which made him a main contender against Romney in 12. But, that's a little bit of Hogan's background. We'll touch on this, but he went to Ole Miss from Arkansas originally. Started out as a TV reporter, ended up covering the legislature in Arkansas because the Susan McDougal trial was going on with Whitewater.
Oh, yes.
And the people had moved over that were covering legislature and were doing that, so he moved up into that spot. Ended up working for Governor Huckabee.
Political witch hunts are not a new thing. Is that what you're trying to say? We've been doing these for a while.
There is some history of that potentially being the case.
Gotcha.
Yes. And then went from there to staying with Huckabee for a while, ran his political action committee, ended up being a comms guy for multiple runs through presidential campaigns, including Huckabee and Santorum, and then was hired by the Trump administration October of last year. So I guess, you know, 10 months or so he's been on the job now there in the West Wing. So.
Probably feels like about 10 years.
I wouldn't doubt that. I'm sure his days are quite complicated from time to time. But nonetheless, I mean, somebody who it appears that Ole Miss is reaching out to embrace him in multiple ways. And that's a good idea because he has succeeded in his field. And there's no doubt. So,
probably a smart move.
Probably a smart move, yeah. He should be pretty high on the list. So anyway. Really, really gracious with his time.
If he can handle those crises, he probably could handle Ole Misses.
Yeah, there's probably something, too. You know, when he gets out of this, whenever that is, if it's, you know, eight years or whatever, the next gig when the guy comes in and goes, you know, Hogan, I understand you're in crisis communication, but here's the stuff we have to deal with. He probably can laugh at him and go, I've been there. I've handled it.
I would think he's already to that point.
Yeah, it's all good. So, again, he came in on a Saturday to the White House. Took me around, gave me some time, so can't thank him enough, and we'll get to that here in a little bit. Fall camp opening tomorrow, or at least media day. I guess there might be a practice, too. I don't know. I'm not sure what the schedule is for them tomorrow. But as I walked in this morning, you were working on five questions for fall camp. We'll spend a few minutes on it. What do you got? Let's go through.
Are we going to give away my content?
Well, we're going to analyze the content.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know. Give me two or three. We got to spend about 20 minutes here. So what do you got?
I'll give you all five.
I don't really need all five.
Okay.
Sure.
One, and this is going to rub some people the wrong way until they read it, is they've got to have good Jordan Tamu all year. And Jordan Tamu is going to be scouted differently. People have had an off season now. People have dug in at Alabama and LSU and Auburn, and they've spent days on every team, including Ole Miss, and they've dug in on Jordan Tamu. I mean, Alabama didn't spend any time on him last year. They spent their time on Shea Patterson. They're going to dig in. It's in week three. They'll be ready. They'll have looks for him that he's not seen before. They're going to find what he did poorly a year ago, and there were some things, and they're going to lock in on those things. They're going to accentuate those things. They're going to look at what he did well and try to take it away. He's got to be, and he's talked about this. He's prepared for this. He has also spent a lot of his offseason in the film room doing study of opposing defenses, doing self-study. One and two kind of go together because part two of this is that Ole Miss a year ago ran the football with Jordan Wilkins. After Jordan Wilkins, it was Devon Penniman. They're both gone. I know Penniman's still here, but you don't have to be a read-between-the-lines guy to read what Matt Luke said about Devon Penniman and understand that, at best, he's second half of the season. At best. Realistically, he's not playing this year. So that means that your next leading rusher is Jordan Tamu, and I don't personally believe that it's in their season plan to run Jordan Tamu a lot. I understand it might be part of the game plan, but Jordan Tamu running the football 20 times a game is a recipe for disaster in this league. You've got to find another running back, and if you don't, if you can't establish that, Tamu has to be almost perfect for them to have a chance against the better defensive teams in the league. The good news for them, Chase, is that when you break it down, the first half of the season, they only play two good defenses, Alabama and LSU. They get Texas Tech, nothing against the Red Raiders, but no one's nominating their defense for defense of the year. They get Southern Illinois, they get Kent State, and they get Louisiana Monroe. They don't play elite defenses outside of Alabama, and LSU's going to be good on defense. They're going to have athletes all over the field that they always have. They always will. They're going to be good on defense. Alabama's going to be great on defense. That's just how they are. Alabama does have some questions in the secondary, but their front seven is special. It has been for years under Saban, and it will be for a while. So he's got some time to ease into it, but he's got to be really good for them to have a chance.
Yeah, he started out really, really good. He was just okay in some games late, including at Mississippi State. Now he does have the crutch of three talented wide receivers there with him. And that, you know, you look back at the State game, and that's what a lot of that was too. You know, A.J. Brown made a play. D.K. Metcalf made a play. Dawson Knox is going to give him another outlet, including DeMarcus Lodge, who, you know, it's funny because Lodge, all the talent, the ability he has, he's sort of the forgotten man with this group a little bit. We always talk about DK and AJ, then we sort of talk about Dawson Knox's story, but Lodge is still over there too. It's going to be hard to cover everybody.
Yeah, it's almost impossible to cover everybody, especially if you can develop some semblance of a running game, of a traditional running game.
When you have to, especially. That's what we talk about. It's second half, fourth quarter, third and two. When you've got to have the yard, it's not about balance as far as plays. I don't believe in that a little bit as far as, oh, well, I got 50 plays, I need to be 25-25. But I've got to give the threat that when I need to run the football, I can run the football, and that's what we'll see over time. I don't know the answer to that right now. So.
Then on the other side of the ball, there are some alarming stats. I mean, the bottom line is if they don't have some guys who've not really contributed before contribute, they have problems. I don't have the numbers exactly in front of me, but from a sacks standpoint, I think they had 29 sacks a year ago.
Okay.
18 and a half of those belong to people who are no longer active on the roster. Taylor Polk's around. He had one of them, but he's not going to play. They lose DeMarcus Gates, Breland Speaks, Marquise Haynes. People talk about that wasn't a good defense a year ago, and it wasn't. Those were the best players on that defense. They lose Taylor Polk, A.J. Moore. There's a lot of tackles lost.
5
of the top 10 are gone, including Gates with 114 tackles, Speaks with 67, A.J. Moore with 48, I mean, Marquise Haynes with 45, and Taylor Polk with 38, or 39. I can't read my own writing. It's a lot. It's a lot lost. And when you look at the guys that are asking to fill in outside of Josiah Coatney, there's not a lot of proven players there, especially in the front seven. There's some proven guys in the secondary.
Yeah, secondary's okay.
Secondary's got a chance to be a strength. It's going to have to be a strength. When you look at their linebacker play, we've talked about this a lot. They lose DeMarcus Gates. They lose Taylor Polk. There's just not a lot there in terms of returners.
And it gets overlooked all the time, too, is they also lost, as we just mentioned, from a tackling standpoint, but you lose Breland and you lose those guys. you lose the guys that occupy space and blocks in the middle to allow linebackers to roam free. If they're at all worse on the defensive line, that also means they're also potentially worse than the linebackers just from the standpoint of space and running around. I mean, that's a key element to this. And, look, I don't know what he would have done or not done, but that's another blow that they're probably going to deal with the likely absence of Noah Jefferson to wherever he ends up. Because if nothing else, he was a dude with a lot of talent and a big son of a gun you could throw there in the middle of the defensive line, and it does not look like he's going to be on the roster. So with that being the situation, that's just another thing to overcome because – you know, I've heard it a lot over the offseason. A lot of fans go, well, they'll be better because you can't be worse. That's a scary statement when you look at the stats you're making. I mean, they need to be better. They certainly can be better. But I don't think from a statistical standpoint, it's a guarantee that just because you roll out some new helmets, it's a guarantee, you know, it's making up the ground from the guys that have been moving on with their lives.
Oh, there's no doubt. It's going to be a challenge. But there's a handful of people that you talk about fall camp meaning it being important to them. I mean, guys like Dante Evans and Willie Hibbler and Muhammad Sanagu and Josh Clark and Vernon Dasher.
Time to go and earn a spot because it's there.
It's now. Yeah, I mean, you just can't win in this league without linebacker play. You just can't. You can't do it. It's not possible. I've never seen anybody do it. You got to have linebackers that can make tackles, that can make coverage plays, that can make that 6-yard catch a 6-yard catch and not a 26-yard catch. Got to limit big plays. You have to do all that. You have to have people who understand the defense, who can run sideline to sideline. Because here's the thing, this is elementary, and I get it. There's so much talk about Ole Miss's offense. Barrett Salee was on this podcast the other day, talking about just how electric it is. I guest hosted a show in Memphis last week and had Aaron Suttles on, and I kind of threw at him, hey, Barrett Salee said that he thinks Alabama loses one game and he thinks it's Ole Miss. What do you think? And he said, you know, it's funny. We were just sort of talking about that because Alabama's secondary is kind of shaky, unproven. Ole Miss has all these targets. Yes, they do. But you have to get the ball to the offense. And if I'm an opposing team playing Ole Miss, I'm just wanting to eat clock. AJ Brown, DK Metcalf, those guys, they're not going to hurt me sitting on the bench waiting their turn. They're not making plays over there. I want those guys just standing on the sideline, looking formidable in their uniforms, standing over there. I want to control clock. I want to first downs.
I get it's much more complicated than this, times 1,000. But if you're Ole Miss defensively, don't you almost kind of want to just be aggressive, try to cause as many turnovers as possible, and if you get points, at least it happens fast?
I think there's a thought to that. I don't know that that's Matt Luke's DNA.
Yeah, it's not.
So I don't know that that's the way he thinks. That's getting dangerously close into the Cliff Kingsbury school of thought.
Well, that's my defensively.
I understand that.
Yeah. But they have to complement one another.
Yeah, where it's, let's just get off the field. I just don't know that that's the way he's wired. I don't know that he wants to recruit that way. And so he has a...
And when you have depth issues, that's a problem.
And that's the fifth thing I'm going to get on. I've written the first four. I've got to get into the fifth a little bit, where it's complicated. This is not about one season. This is year one for a head coach. This is year one. Last year was an interim season. This is his first season to put his program stamp on. And I know what people say, well, they did that last year. No, they really didn't. Last year was week to week, coaching for your jobs, us against the world, the exact same stuff I would have done had it been me. It's not a criticism. But you have to have a different approach now. You are playing to impress recruits. You're wanting to be able, after these games, to show these recruits, hey, did you see that? That's where you fit in. This is what we're looking for. This is what we're trying to do. So I think it's a little more complicated than you. Yeah, you play to win each game, but you are also wanting to put a personality stamp, a characteristic stamp on your program moving forward, because I think we all admit or agree that 2019 is going to be challenging. Is that fair?
Sure.
you've got to start thinking about, hey, that 2020 season, you've got to put a product on the field that is obvious progress, that is talented, that is, yeah, it might be young, but it's talented. It's they're going places. You're recruiting now. You're all that, all this NCAA stuff. It's amusing to me that people keep harping on it. It's completely immaterial.
You need a consistent identity for your program.
Yes.
From right now.
And you have to establish it now. Even though that might not be, it's why, like, for example, look at Arkansas. If Chad Morris wanted to max out this team at Arkansas, you wouldn't make sweeping changes to your offense. But if you want to recruit to a style, you've got to show those kids, hey, this is what we're going to run.
Go ahead and do it.
This is what we do. And that might get you beat against Ole Miss in October, right?
Yeah.
In Little Rock, I mean, you know, the way to beat Ole Miss is they pound it at them.
A normal Brett Bielema type team.
Yeah, let's line up those guys. They're not great up front. Let's get them. Yeah, but that's not what we're recruiting to. And so after the games, when you get on the phone on Saturday night and Sunday, and you're calling 4-star wide receiver from Missouri,
he threw the ball 14 times.
Yeah, it's like, hey, what they want to say is, hey, man, we don't. I mean, I love our kids. They work hard. And we love
ain't got
them.
Got a dude,
but we don't have the dude that you are. And do you see how we targeted him 13 times today? He doesn't have the skills to make those catches. Now, he's busting his ass. We love him. We love his mama, and his mama cooks great meatloaf.
But you'd have gone for 11 and 161 and 2.
Yeah, but you're going to catch some of those balls. That ball, that third and seven that we needed that fell incomplete, you catch that. And we're going to throw it to you. So I think that's the best analogy I can make, is that whatever stamp Matt Luke wants to put on this program, he has to start doing it now. And I don't know that it's his defensive DNA, and I know he's an offensive coach, but I don't know that it's his defensive DNA to go, hey, let's go for it. Let's make big plays, and we're going to give up big plays, and we're going to get in a shooting match, and let's try to win this thing 51-48. Won't that be fun? I just don't think that's the way he's wired. Now, he might tell me, oh, bullshit, I want to win. We're going to do whatever we have to do to win. But I don't know how you do that and then tell a kid we're going to have a defense that produces NFL players. Because that's not the way they play on Sunday. NFL's all about eliminating the big play, making teams drive the field, settle for a field goal. That's their scheme. I don't know that, hey, we're going to be wild and crazy and we're going to be Texas Tech of the SEC.
Well, in Texas Tech is having a hard time making that work in the Big 12.
It doesn't work.
So
it doesn't work, and so that's I don't think that's the way he's going to do it. So I don't know. It'll be that's to me the watching them defensively is going to be fascinating because they've got to get off the field to get the offense back on the field. And you look at teams like Alabama early, LSU early. I think those kind of teams are the ones that could potentially expose that as a weakness. The second half of the schedule is much different than the first half.
So let's go to the Billy's Pecans hotline in a second. Before we do that, are you looking to relocate to the Collierville area? The Berry Home Team has the perfect spot for you. 1252 Braygood Drive, home and neighborhood with so much to offer. The neighborhood features neighborhood pool, clubhouse, path, lake, soccer field, playground, and more in the Collierville School District. 5 bedrooms, 4.5 baths, refinished hardwood floors, new paint, renovated master bath, and plenty of space. Also, there's 2 bedrooms and 2.5 baths downstairs and the split bedroom floor plan. Upstairs, 3 bedrooms and 2 baths, large office, separate media room, and more for your Rebel football game watch parties. You call the Berry Home Team today at 901-481-6420. Again, that's 1252 Braygood Drive in Collierville, and they've got an open house from 2 to 4 on Saturday, August 5th.
We've got you covered here. If you're looking for real estate in Memphis, it's Stacy Berry. If you're looking for real estate in the Birmingham area, Megan Phillips with LAH Real Estate is the person to call for all your real estate needs. She's got almost a decade of experience, and Megan's knowledge and expertise can help you buy or sell your home in the Birmingham area today. Visit her website. It's MeganMPhillips.com. That's MEAGANMPHILLIPS.com or call Megan at 205-602-7929. Again, 205-602-7929. And if you're looking in the Oxford area, it's Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based REMAX Legacy Realty agent. No one knows the residential and condo market in Oxford better than Harry. Go to his site, harryalexander.com, click on the Properties and Neighborhoods tab, filter through by what you're looking for, and then send him an email. It's ha@harryalexander.com. We are a month from the start of the regular season, Ole Miss and Texas Tech in Houston on September the 1st. A week after that, Ole Miss opens its home slate with Southern Illinois coming to town. In other words, it's almost tailgating time. You want to go ahead and get your tailgating situated, get everything set up. 7 South tailgating is the way to go. They're celebrating 10 years of business this season. Try 7 South once. You'll never tailgate without them again. 7 South will set up your own personal gear, or you can rent everything from them. No one matches their customer service, their attention to detail, whether you're coming up just for one game, just coming up for the league games, just coming up for every game. 7 South has a plan for you, and whether your tailgate is very simple or really intricate, they can hook you up. 7SouthTailgating.com.
Podcast is brought to you by Community Mortgage, Oxford, Memphis, Soto County, and Chattanooga. All underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. You're getting local underwriting. Understand your market. A leader in condo financing and the float down option. 662-234-2704. Or JLO, that's JLOWE, at communitymtg.com. Now Hogan Gidley on the Billy's Pecans Hotline.
Now, as I alluded to in the opening, we are coming to you from the West Wing of the White House. Have not said that before on this podcast or many podcasts. So to our friends in the Golden Triangle that call us the Tater Log Podcast, appreciate that. Hello to all of you. Today, you're a top 10 market, and we love you, but I'm going to put this in your face a little bit. Hogan Gidley joining me, as I mentioned earlier, Deputy Press Secretary for the Trump administration. I think Special Assistant to the President on your cards over here, too, Hogan. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. Just saying. You know, you were on a beer garden a long time ago. You were in Oxford. I think you were on with Neil and Jeffrey, a show that has transformed a little bit, too. And your life has changed a little bit in the last 3 years or however long since then, I would think.
It has. I think actually I was on before with you guys from the inauguration, too. Remember, I was right in D.C. At the inauguration. At the time, I was a contributor for CBS News, and I was up here covering that, commenting on that. So it's changed even in that short amount of time. But in this White House, things seem to change minute by minute. So 3 years is an eternity. We joke and we say things happen here. It's like dog years. So I've been here 9.5 months, almost 10 months, and it feels like I've been here for a very long time.
Yeah, almost a year now. When did I guess take me through that a little bit. I mean, you get this type of appointment, and some people go, well, how do you kind of get here? When did you first, this be a possibility? Kind of take me through how this happens for somebody.
Sure. Well, I had looked at several jobs within the administration because the chief of staff at the time, Reince Priebus, who I'd worked with for a long time, and Sean Spicer, I've known for a decade. You know, they worked on the campaign. They wanted me to join the administration in some capacity. We worked through several different agencies. We went through several cabinet secretaries, and I met with several members of the administration. And then all of a sudden, after doing that for several months, and government does really move at a glacial pace, and in that process, it turns out Sean Spicer leaves. When Sean Spicer leaves, Sarah gets promoted. I've worked with Sarah Huckabee. I mean, I worked for Governor Huckabee when he was governor, so I've known Sarah Huckabee since she was 19. So it's kind of funny to be working with her again after all these years. But, you know, she called me and said, look, let's not put you in agency. We need you here in the West Wing instead, and we think you could help out here. We think it's a better fit. And so I came up and interviewed, and I met with Kellyanne Conway, who I've also known for about 8 years, and then Sarah, and they said, there you go. Now, there is a little irony. I don't think I've ever told this story publicly. We talked about that position, and I went back to my hotel to take a nap. Now, I had a live shot that night with CBS. First time in the White House ever, first time in the West Wing ever. I mean, I was just blown away by the whole experience. I mean, you know, just for me, I have a very Mr. Smith goes to Washington mentality about the whole thing. So I was just in love with the whole, it's so romantic, and I was just so excited about it. Go back to my hotel, exhausted, take a nap. And I wake up and Reince Priebus has been is leaving. He's leaving the White House. So I was quite confused because I thought, wait a minute, here was my contact. One of my contacts that was pushing for me to get this position is gone. So I text Sarah and check with her. She said, no, everything's fine. But then she said, I want you to meet with Scaramucci, Anthony Scaramucci, who'd just been in a communication director. Don't worry, you're going to meet with him on Monday. Well, Monday rolls around and he's gone. So it was just a weird, I was like, oh, where does that leave me at this point? But it's actually fortuitous because when General Kelly came on, who was at Customs Border Protection, came on as chief of staff, four-star general, amazing man, Marine, just great as the day is long. And they had wanted me to come to Customs Border Protection to help them with communications. So he kind of knew who I was, which was also very helpful. So when he came on board, it still took a couple months, but then I got offered the position.
I talked with you about this. I did a profile on you that hasn't been published yet for one of the magazines at Ole Miss. But so I'll let you say it in audio form now. When this comes and you finally get the offer and you're accepting and in your field, which we'll go through a little bit here as we move along, what kind of goes through your head? Because I mean, I told you the day that we first talked about it, I said, to me it almost seems like you're getting called up to be the shortstop of the Yankees in your profession, and you sort of agreed with me, but I have to think, you know, again, this isn't about politics, this is about life and career goals and things like that, but it has to be an overwhelming moment.
It really was, Chase. I look back on it. You wonder how you got here, because again, I'd been up for several jobs. I'd even interviewed with the vice president. I came back and met with him three times. Met his family. That looked like that was going to be one of the tracks I took, and instead, I ended up here. And it is. I mean, for someone in my profession, I mean, there's nothing bigger than being a spokesperson on behalf of a president of the United States. To work in the West Wing, to speak on behalf of this administration, is something that's so overwhelming. I mean, you can travel through Iowa all you want. You can travel through Mississippi, and you can be the spokesperson for Governor Bryant. You can be the spokesperson for Governor Huckabee, and that's a big deal. Don't get me wrong. It's just a little bit different when you come here. It's a little bit bigger, and I think being called up to the Yankees would probably be a good analogy. And, you know, I have to answer questions about, it's a wide range. I mean, someone will come to my office all day long and I get questions about North Korea and Melania's heels in a day, and it's the weirdest thing because I'm supposed to know some information about it seems like every little bit. But it's an amazing experience. It's humbling every day, and you know, you never get tired of it. But people tell me, or I tell people all the time when they come through on tours and things like that, if you ever plateau and you're just, it becomes kind of a job, and you forget about the grandeur of the place, the grandiosity, I guess, of the place, you just bring a tour by. Bring someone through the West Wing, because their eyes light up at every little detail, and it just kind of brings like a renewed spirit. I liken it probably to, I don't have children, but I would, you know, Christmas is Christmas to me now. I can't imagine if you have a kid how Christmas all of a sudden becomes alive again. It's just like every day, it's just like you can renew that spirit of this place.
How do you go about that? Because like you said, I know you have help, obviously a team of people, but just in your daily routine, what is the way that you do keep not only an understanding of everything going on, but like you said, you're not just speaking for you. You're speaking for a whole another deal, a whole administration, and everything's got to be very, very careful there. So I have to think that there's a certain amount of nonstop preparation, because one word starts a whole another hill of beans that would be a problem.
No question. It is so humbling, but it's also the gravity of each situation is intense. I mean, every newscast that we get invited to do, every live shot we end up doing, is there's a potential there for a real issue, because you've got to be very careful about how far you lean on something. So much of what we do, whether it be negotiations with other countries, or you know, private conversations he's had with people, or that I was privy to, conversations he's had with me. There are things you can tell press people, you can tell the public, and there are more things, more often than not, you can't say a word about any of this stuff. So it's a weighty experience, because it is so, it's under a microscope like I've never seen before. So that's another layer to it. It's not just the mess up, it's that if you use a wrong word, or you go too far and say something that's incorrect, the pile on is so immense. But even still, you can go on and give a flawless interview and it be perfect, and you still get piled on by people who hate you and say you know, that you're the worst thing on the planet, and you get all types of weird comments and threats and things like that. But you know,
Did you anticipate that part of it? I mean, just from a personal standpoint, I mean, it's not, I don't think it's speaking out of turn to say it's a very hot button administration from that standpoint. How did you kind of think going in, hey, this is how I'm going to be perceived potentially in public with people and just different things? Because it changed your life in a lot of ways just from an image standpoint.
It has. I mean, look, I've been in this business now for 15 years, so I have somewhat of a reputation with all the press corps, but you know, even when I was in TV news in a local market, I'm used to people coming up and saying, hey, we watched the show, great job, whatever. This is different because you don't always get the praise. In fact, more often than not, you get the negativity. You get, I get the double finger salute quite often walking through town. I get yelled at. I got yelled at in the grocery store the other day. And that's kind of part of the deal. And now you have people on the left who are actively calling for harassment to members of the administration. That's in a place we've not been before, and I don't want to go too far down that road, but it does put targets on our backs in more ways than one. And it's something that, quite frankly, it's a shame because, you know, a lot of good men and women out there who want to serve their country see what happens to us, and they don't have the stomach for it or don't want to do it. And here they are with a servant's heart, with all the right motives in the world, who could potentially come in and help the government and help literally change lives across the country, but they won't do it for fear of the harassment and the intimidation and the nastiness that occurs in this position. But that is part of where we are in this world, and you know, you just kind of have to live with it. And I always say, and I'll wrap with this anecdote: if you're traveling through Iowa for a candidate and you're going to all 99 counties, which I've done now three times, if you can't put your head on the pillow at night knowing you're fighting for something bigger than you or something you love, it's almost impossible. I mean, I'm just not a gun for hire. I mean, I have to believe in what my candidate is doing. In this particular instance, I believe in what the president's doing. And so for all of the difficulties you face in a day, when you go home and you lie down at night, it is it's humbling, yes, I've used that word multiple times, but it's also fulfilling to know you're working for something that you believe in.
Mostly an Ole Miss base. Listen to this. Back up a little bit. You had roots in Carolina and Arkansas. 18-year-old, 17-year-old Hogan Gidley. Why Ole Miss? What was kind of the story behind how you ended up there?
Well, I looked at Arkansas, Alabama, Westminster, actually in Fulton, Missouri. I got a full scholarship to that and turned them down on a phone call. My mother was quite upset with that. But you know, I just looked all over the Southeast, and I just felt like Ole Miss was. You know, everyone from Arkansas goes to Arkansas. So for me, I had no appeal whatsoever. I wanted to do something different. And I had a couple of friends who were older than I was who played tennis with me, but they played tennis at Ole Miss. So I went and checked it out and just fell in love with it. I mean, you hear recruits say that all the time. You hear just regular students say they just fell in love with the place. And I did that. The town was amazing. And so went to Oxford and no idea what to do for a major. And it was because I was editor of the paper in high school. I thought journalism seems easy. I know something about that. And then started in TV news right after college. And I worked at, it was Channel 12 News Watch. And I don't know what it is now, but that's what it was, the campus TV station. So
one thing that Ole Miss does have is an ability for the students to pretty much do every bit of that. How did that kind of benefit you from the standpoint of you got to understand enough, not only just to start your professional career, but I would assume even now, you know, everybody you run across, you have some idea of what they're dealing with on a day-to-day basis.
Absolutely. I think it was such a the preparation I received at Ole Miss it's so rare and so special. And I know that now because now I'm 41 years old and I've interviewed people who come out of school with a journalism degree and they don't have a clue how to write a story. They don't have a clue how to edit a package. They don't have a clue of how to, you know, interview somebody. And I learned all that at Ole Miss. When I got out, I was ready to be on camera, ready to put my own stories together and to do my work. And I was working alongside people who'd been in the business for a year, 2 years, trying to be a reporter, and they didn't have the knowledge base that I had. And that was solely based on the education I received at Ole Miss. I mean, being able to have a total student-run newscast every day at 5 o'clock was at the time was extremely unique around the country. I think there was only one other school that did it, but we were the only one that was completely student run. So it was an amazing experience, but the preparation was like nothing else in the country.
You graduate from Ole Miss and you go into just like broadcast news. I mean, you're a broadcast reporter and whatnot. Where did politics angle into this, and where did your career kind of shift to there?
Well, so really because I had had to do one of those summer sessions at Ole Miss to make sure I'd be on time, and I took political science was my minor. And I took a class that really made me fall in love with government that summer. I made a C in it. It was like a really bad – I didn't do
well. Don't admit that out loud.
But it was so exciting. Like, I just loved it, the class so much. And so I started looking into politics, and then I started covering politics. And the interesting anecdote, when I was in a TV station in Little Rock, our chief political correspondent went to cover the Susan McDougal trial, the Whitewater trial for Bill Clinton. And so there's no one covering the legislature. So I went to cover the legislature, fell in love with that, met Governor Huckabee, and then got into that orbit, and that's where I was.
Took a break in our talk with Hogan to tell you the podcast is also brought to you by Locker Stockers. Customer places their order with Locker Stockers. They handle purchasing and delivery to your locker or suite before game day at Vaught Hemingway this season. Also the Pavilion when basketball gets here, or Swayze Field for baseball. They also we'll take care of everything for you if you so desire. It is 662-586-1487 or info at lockerstockers.com.
Rebel Nation, 2018 is the year of the fan. Ole Miss Athletics wants to showcase your stories and recognize you, the Ole Miss fan base. Exciting prizes and experiences throughout the year will be featured on omyearofthefan.com and updated often, so be sure to visit omyearofthefan.com. Podcast also brought to you by Oxford University Bank. OUB is locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB gives you the comfort of home, all the benefits the big mega banks provide, all the technology and products you can want, all with a personal touch. When you call OUB, you speak directly with the live person. There's no 10 buttons to push. There's no 5-minute wait. OUB offers its customers the absolute best cash checking account. It's called Kasasa, and with Kasasa, OUB will pay customers 2.5% interest on their balances up to $50,000. And with Kasasa, ATM fees nationwide are refunded. OUB also offers online bill pay and mobile check deposit using its online app. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. Now back to Hogan Gidley on the Billy's Pecans Hotline.
You're giving the left plenty of ammunition now. You might see in a political science class back in college, and now you're speaking for the country. Look at you.
Look, I tell you, if that's the worst they have on me, then that's I have no problem with that.
So you start working for Huckabee, but I have to think that was it always, hey, I want to stay down this politics path, or was it, because you and I talked about this a little bit, was there almost some semblance of, if I do this, I know enough about it, I could jump back at a higher level on the other side of things back in broadcast?
That's what I wanted to do, because that was a tract I discovered by many broadcasters in the Washington, D.C. area. They went to work for a politician. They didn't have to hop around from little market to little market. And typically when you're a broadcast journalism major or a journalist, I should say, you go from little town to medium town till you finally get a bigger break. And I thought, well, I'll just skip all those steps and go work for a politician and jump back out and get into TV news. But I've never thought once, much less twice, about leaving politics and getting back in TV news. I mean, and what I do now, I'm able to go on TV and still talk and do my thing even before this job. So it filled that, you know, that desire to be on TV and get my message out there, or the message for my candidate, without having to fully be a journalist.
I know Governor Huckabee obviously instrumental in everything you've done to this point, but when I look at kind of what all you've done, I have to think that in 12 you were the communications guy for Santorum. He wins Iowa, and it springboards you into basically daily TV because he was a legitimate candidate for the nomination at that point. Do you look back and see that as one of those kind of watershed splice moments for you?
No question. I think when I was executive director of the South Carolina Republican Party in 2008, that's where I really got into wanting to do that on a national level, because we were the center of the universe. I mean, you had to win South Carolina to win the nomination. We had two presidential debates, one in Myrtle Beach and one in Columbia, both nationally televised from Fox. I got to know everybody over at Fox, so I started building relationships with the national media because I was the ED of the party, and everyone wanted to come to South Carolina. But you mentioned Santorum. Absolutely. I mean, he won, I think it was 13 states. I mean, we were very close to beating Mitt Romney in Michigan, and had we done that, I think he would have been the nominee. But I mean, that put me into a daily rotation on Fox, on MSNBC, on CNN, and because he was an unknown candidate, we went on the networks that no one else would go on. So I had to go on MSNBC. I had to go on CNN, and I love doing it. And that's why I have so many friends at those networks. But that was definitely the springboard, I think, to really getting me fired up about doing stuff like this, but also for allowing me entry into this world.
My listeners know I'm not a day to day necessarily like just engrossed in politics, but I'm a campaign junkie. I love campaigns. What is that like? I mean, you're going through Iowa, you're going through all these counties and different things, and you're speaking to any group you can speak to at this point. And I have to think just exhaustion takes over after a while. You're freezing cold. I mean, there has to be a certain amount of push there just to get through that thing.
No question. And you know, again, it goes back to what I said. You have to believe in what you're doing and the candidate. And I did that. And when you have a low budget candidate, it seems like all of my candidates were not, you know, the corporate types, as Mike Huckabee and Rick Santorum. But
your candidate is now
right. The hardworking blue collar folks, and it's amazing. But you know, they did it the old fashioned way. They earned it, and they went to every county. And I mean, I posted a picture or a video on Instagram, I think, back during that campaign. It was so cold in Iowa as we were driving through the tundra. We had the heater on in the car, and there was still ice on the inside of the window. I drew like a picture on the inside of the, I mean, it's freezing there. There's no, and the wind is brutal. I mean, it's tough. But every time you meet a voter, and every time a voter says, you know, you can help change my life for the better, it gives you something. It gives you fuel to keep going and a desire to keep pushing through those cold temperatures and the late nights and the no sleep and the early morning starts and all that type of stuff.
What is the normal day? I mean, how much do you sleep when you're on the campaign trail like that, just day after day after day after day?
It's a handful of hours. It depends on how early you get in at a night. I have learned this job, to bring it full circle, when you have a moment, you have to take it. And by that, I mean, if he goes out of town and you've got an hour to go do something or an hour you can leave at 7 o'clock at night as opposed to 9 o'clock at night, do it. Don't stay up here and keep fiddling around, because you can always find something to do. But you need to reset mentally and physically. You need to do it on campaigns, but you definitely need to do it in this job, because even when you go home, you're still on. I mean, I still get emails, you know, till 1 in the morning, 2 in the morning. President tweets regularly. You may or may not know this, and so that comes out. And then we have to talk to reporters about those tweets. So it just because you're home, it's not over. But you need those little moments to kind of to charge yourself.
Do you have his account as an alert on your phone for when he tweets?
Oh, of course.
See it immediately.
Of course, I do, and it goes off, and I use it frequently. He's tweeted, I think, over 4,000 times now. I mean, that's obviously a record. I mean, Twitter is something Barack Obama used it, but not nearly like this president. And you know, he likes to take his message right to the people. He doesn't want to use the filters of the Don Lemons of the world, or the Anderson Coopers of the world, or the Hallie Jacksons on MSNBC, or even us, you know, myself or Sarah. He wants to take it directly to the American people, and no one says what they're thinking better than Donald Trump. And so when he has a thought about a policy or a issue of the day, he lets people know about it.
Neil and I have talked about Twitter a lot, and it's such, you know, when you consider the entire population or even the full segment of whatever you do, it's a very small sample size as far as the actual readership on Twitter. Tweets, not his obviously, but most people tweet and speak tweets last, I think, an average of 7 minutes, something like that. And, you know, in our business, we got to make sure not to give too much weight to Twitter. Is it a standpoint of that, or how do you guys kind of see the demographics of Twitter, or is it simply because with him, everything he says becomes a news story, and it's how it's picked up and distributed from that point?
How do you mean? I'm sorry.
Okay, well, I guess what I'm saying is, you know, we know that for the most part, Twitter's a younger demographic.
Right.
It's a small demographic. It's usually kind of a cold, dark place on the internet, to be honest. Mm-hmm. So is it the people that he's reaching, do you feel like it's making an impact or making a story, or is it how it gets picked up and distributed from there that's the bigger thing?
Oh, both.
Okay.
I think, you know, the media have the alerts too, and so I can't tell how many times I go back in the morning and walk through all the booths and have conversations with all the press people and find out what they're working on, how can we help them with information, what do you need to know about a story overnight, those types of things. And oftentimes I'll be staying there and they'll say, what does he think about? And I say, I haven't talked to him about that. Let me go check. I'll see if I can pop in and find something out. And then he'll tweet about it. And I'm staying there as Twitter bells go off, and I point to them and say, well, that's what he thinks about it. All right. And they say, what does that mean? I say, well, I'm not going to go any further than the tweet. That's what it says. So it drives the news cycle quite regularly, but it also gives information to people who are out there wondering what the president thinks on a certain topic. And so when they wonder, they don't have to wait for the 9 o'clock newscast, the 10 o'clock newscast. They can go on Twitter and chances are they can find out about it. And it's a good way to update things if there are wildfires raging across the country or some military threat that's happening on the other side of the world. You know, chances are he's going to say something about it. And I think he's revolutionized the way that presidents communicate. And it's a strategy that I feel like he used very effectively in the campaign, but also as president. Because whatever he says, I mean, he's got millions and millions and millions of followers, and whatever he says gets retweeted millions of times and commented on millions of times by just average people in that cold, dark place, as you just put it. But it also has the potential to lead a newscast. It also has the potential to drive the narrative of the news on any given day or hour, for that matter.
That's where I was going next. You've got a campaign brain. I mean, if you'd have been his campaign or whatever had during that segment, I mean, would it have been a strategy that goes, hey, yeah, this makes tons of sense while also scaring you to death? Or, I mean, how would you have kind of approached it had you been involved at that point?
Twitter itself.
Yeah, with your candidate.
Yeah, look, I've never been one to try and strong arm a candidate and make them into the mold that I think they need to be in. What brings me to help a candidate is because I gravitate toward their message, their vision, and how they are. Now, inevitably, in every relationship, work-wise, personally, professionally, whatever it may be, you know, you're not going to agree 100% of the time on how you get things done. But it's not. It wouldn't be my job in this position or on a campaign to say, let's not do it that way. If that's his or her default, you know, I can offer advice and I can help shape it. But that's I like for the candidate, in this instance, the president, to be who he is at his core, and I like to help push the benefits of who he is. And so I would never shy away from or advise him not to do. Not to be who he is, right? You need a strong hand, but there's a softness to say, you know, this is you, this is who you are. Let's work with who you are, and make that a positive. And again, he did it. I mean, all the critics, all the detractors during the campaign said he can't do this. He's not going to win. The Twitter's horrible. He's got to lay off Twitter. And he won. And then they said, well, he's got to lay off Twitter. Well, why would he lay off Twitter if he just used it so effectively to win? He's going to use it to get out his message, and he does that today.
What's been the biggest you obviously had a lot of ideas of what this job was about, but is there one or two things that was a surprise or something that you had to adjust to that maybe you didn't expect when you first got appointed?
Yeah, there are a couple things. One, I would say, is having to have conversations with other entities in the building that have to be consulted before you make a statement. And I say that like if you're on a campaign trail and you say, you know, let's say Chase Parham gets picked up and arrested for something, you know, on a campaign, you could say Chase Parham has committed treason. Someone should lock him up or do this or do that. Well, if I say someone has committed treason from this podium with this bully pulpit, there's a connotation there that means death is coming to Chase Parham. So you have to go through the paces a lot of times to deal with other entities within the building to find out, you know, what specifically, how far can I go on this topic? What pitfalls do I need to watch out for? And I think that's something that I'd forgotten about having worked with Governor Huckabee, but it is something that came back really quickly when I came on the job, and we had drafted a few statements, and I had to go. They said, "Well, yeah, check with this entity or check with that entity." And I went by and thought, I've forgotten all about that. But that's something I think that we don't just put statements out willy nilly. I mean, we have to really pour through those things a lot, because the gravity of what we say and the ramification of what we say can be felt literally across the world. And you'll watch some of our, like Secretary Wilbur Ross or Commerce Secretary or Steve Mnuchin or Larry Kudlow, you can see markets literally stop when they're on television and change direction, either up or down, depending on what they say. That's a very weighty thing to consider when you see that happen.
Sitting here in your office in the West Wing, your diploma, you've got the Frankie Everett prose that most people are familiar with, in addition to the Ole Miss, I guess it's Alumni Magazine, as well. I would assume conversation piece for a lot of people that come through here from a day-to-day standpoint. But, I mean, 23 years later, you weren't an in-state guy. It seems like Ole Miss has maintained a pretty precious place for you.
Oh, absolutely. I try to have a piece of it everywhere I go. I mean, I have some pictures in my apartment. You were over there last night. You saw those. And I like to keep a lot of Ole Miss stuff. I had my Ole Miss hat on today. I've already contacted alumni associations here in town. They had Mississippi on the Mall a couple weeks ago here, which is actually Ole Miss and Mississippi State. People get together on the Mall and do crawfish and beer and all that kind of stuff down there. I didn't go. I had to go with the president somewhere, so I had a valid excuse. But, you know, I stay in tune with Ole Miss. I do pay attention to rivals a lot, not to plug the site, but I do pay attention to recruiting. I pay attention to the games. I was looking at the Instagram. I love how they put the they do the countdown from 100 days, 99 days till football season starts. I check in that every morning to see if they posted a new video. It gives me a memory of a game that I was either attended or, you know, obviously watched on television. So it's definitely a special place, and I think anyone who went there, or most people, I would say, feels that way. And it's the last line in the Everett quote that everyone knows, that no one really graduates from Ole Miss. It's that's definitely how I feel. In fact, when I moved here, one of my fraternity brother's sisters and her husband, who also went to Ole Miss, let me stay in their English basement for like 3 months until I found a place to live. And so, I mean, the network was so deep that I they actually, you know, gave me food and lodging for a while. So it was really nice.
You know, you're a guy that's, you know, you're going to use Ole Miss sports as an outlet, and when you have a few minutes, and it isn't a complete entertainment thing for you. Is there an extra sense in that now that all the stuff's over, the NCAA stuff, and it's getting back to just normal? Hey, there's a sports team, and you win or you lose, and you follow it every day or whatever it is.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I'm glad that stuff's over. I mean, I watched that really heavily. I wasn't in this position at the time that was going on before this, but that's the kind of thing that just drove me crazy, to watch the way that Ole Miss was treated in the whole process. You know, when you do wrong, you know, you deserve some punishment. But, you know, I have my own opinions about the NCAA, but I don't even think I can say those because of the position I hold. I don't want to cause any problem here, but look, I mean, I'm excited. Football season's about to start. I'm glad that they're now past all that nonsense. And, you know, Matt Luke, he probably wouldn't remember me, but I was at Ole Miss when he was the center. So I knew him. And because I played tennis there, I used to see him in the facility quite a bit. So I'm excited for someone like that who played there. I mean, he's a Mississippi guy. And I don't think that's necessarily relevant to a coach. I mean, I don't think anyone at Alabama's going, you know, I really like Nick Saban, but boy, I wish he was born and raised in Tuscaloosa. Mm-hmm. They don't care as long as he's winning.
Yeah.
But it's a good thing for someone like Matt, who just loves the school so much. He has Ole Miss in his blood, and that's a great thing.
I'm not even going to make you comment here, but is it a comms guy? You've probably had to pull your hair out a few times along the way just from everything going on. And, you know, positively and negatively, just seeing every time there was a decision to be made, it seemed like it was every single day.
Yeah, you know, it's easy to sit outside of a situation and say, oh, man, if I were there, I'd say these five things and it'd all be over with. But I try to avoid that because I hate when people do that to me on campaigns. They call me up and go, you know what your candidate needs to do? And you know what the president needs to do? And I'm like, oh, really? I hadn't thought about that. But because I'm on the inside and know how it works, I take the advice and thank people and then move on with my day. And sometimes it's great advice, sometimes it's not. But regardless of that, I don't like to stand in judgment or criticism of the way they handled it. I've got my own opinions about it, but it's, you know, when you're in the situation, I know things are a little bit more difficult and dicey, but you know, it's over now. So hopefully Ole Miss will go on to see some brighter days. I mean, look, when that team is moving and humming, it's a great place to be.
I appreciate the time. This is I guess Sunday night now that as we're recording, but hopefully you'll have really and truly, you know, forget politics, country continue moving in a positive direction, and you're communicating things that are of a good quality.
Well, me too. I mean, if we didn't have anything to tout, I'd be shrinking away from television stations as much as I could. But there's so much good going on in the country right now, and I mean, just the economy and the way it's moving. And you know, we were told for the last 8 years that we'd never see these manufacturing jobs, and now they're all coming back, and we'd never see GDP over 1.9%, and now it's at 4%. I mean, those are things that the president's done that you know, the detractors is kind of what fuels us some days, because we see it, but we know what's actually going on, and it's just great to be with him on. And I've had the pleasure of riding on Marine One a few times, and obviously I'm on Air Force One a lot, and I do a lot more with the president now than I did when I first got here, for obvious reasons. You develop somewhat of a rapport, and you start to understand the institutional knowledge of the building and how he operates, and it's just. He's just so funny, and he's just so likable. And when you're alone with him and he's making jokes, it just gives you kind of a renewed spirit of why you're here in the first place, why you do what you're doing, and the strength to keep going on and trying to get the message out to the people to see that the man in office is someone who thinks about you personally and wants you to have a better life and will do everything he can to get there.
Well, I appreciate it. We'll hopefully have you on again in the near future.
Thanks so much.
Thanks to Hogan for his time on Saturday. Again, came in during a time period off to help me out with that there at the White House. Podcast also brought to you by MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape, 662-607-7773, mastercutslawn.com. Sign your annual contract. They'll take care of your yard, including at building an outdoor living area, outdoor kitchen, aeration, or more. 662-607-7773.
Hogan Gidley and all other guests join us on the Billy's Pecans Hotline. Billy's Pecans, it's billyspecans.com. You're getting ready for your tailgate. Maybe the high school tailgating, the jamborees and stuff get started here really soon, like a week and a half, which is hard to believe. Maybe you're getting ready for a road trip. You're headed to Houston for the opener. You need some snacks. Whatever the case may be, Billy's Pecans has you taken care of. The cinnamon spice pecans. The toasted pecans, all the different chocolate pecans, milk chocolate, dark chocolate, white chocolate, chocolate amaretto, chocolate Grand Marnier, or the sugar-free chocolate. It's all there at Billy's Pecans. They've got other things as well. The cheese crispies, the coffee cakes, everything you could want. They've got it there at Billy's Pecans. Billy'sPecans.com or 1-800-624-7404.
Let's see. I did a lot of the tourist things over the weekend, pretty much. Hadn't been to D.C. since I was like 8, so had a lot to catch up on.
I love D.C.
I will say, and you know, I've told some people about this, and they go, "Well, you're in that, so I get it." Spent about 3.5 hours at the museum on Saturday or Sunday. I forget.
Yeah, it's cool.
But it's cool just for history purposes. Yes. So even if you're not into journalism, still go, still do it. I mean, I could have spent another 3.5 hours reading old newspapers. They've got the front pages of every historical event, basically, since newspapers began in the 1400s or something. But even if you're not into that, it's worth it just for a very
the 9/11
comprehensive look at the world since that time period.
Their tribute to the 9/11 victims is worth going.
Yeah,
almost in and of itself.
That was probably the neatest one, and now look again, that is my area. But even nonetheless, from a history standpoint, I found that better than maybe anything else I did.
What other? Did you do other Smithsonian stuff?
I did American history and natural history. I'm mad at myself a little bit that we didn't get to Air and Space. I remember Air and Space a good bit from when I was younger, but we had some scheduling conflicts, some of the things I had to do, and it just kind of didn't work out the way that I had anticipated. But also did the National Gallery of Art, and yeah. I'm not an art guy in the slightest. But when you get in the room and there's Monets and Da Vinci's and Degas and all this stuff, there is a certain, wow, that's pretty neat to it. That,
sure.
That will strike you. That was also the museum or the gallery or the place where the most Secret Service was hanging around ready to kill you if you got anywhere close to anything in the National Gallery of Art.
There were certain do not touch rules.
There were sensors in the floors, and if you got within about 12 inches, the guy said, the speaker would come over and go, please step away from the exhibit and back you up. Yeah. No, they were pretty serious about a couple of those rooms there with the Van Goghs and stuff. So, you know. It's what it is. It's all good.
There's some stuff that would be difficult to replace.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Difficult meaning impossible to replace.
An auction on some of the pieces in there would go for quite the penny. You know, and some of them are really, really neat, and I go, I understand why that. And so, again, I have no art. I'm admitting I'm an idiot when it comes to this. I've never even taken a class of art history in college or anything. But I do look at some of them and go, why that and not something else? Like, when I look at it, I go, what is it about that is worldwide famous pieces of intelligence?
Yeah, I've wondered the same thing on a few.
Yeah.
Where you just look at it and you're like, I don't.
It's probably a lot like watching football at the highest level. I don't really know what I'm looking at to the point of understanding it. So,
sure.
But
I mean, I think if you, and I've never been, I think if you go to the Sistine Chapel and look up, you sort of get it. But there are
some obvious ones but there are some
things that you look at and think, I don't get it. I don't understand why that is so elite. But again, there's probably things to it that I don't see that.
I don't know that I have a lot of tips per se. I'm definitely not a seasoned veteran with DC. I will say, though, that there were tons of people taking the bus tours for the monuments and stuff. We took like this little golf cart thing just because I thought, hey, I'm here, spend this hour and a half, do it just to do it, even though I didn't really have a ton of interest. And the little golf cart thing has an individual tour guide with only like four people on the cart.
Yeah.
And they go the full 2.2 miles of the mall or whatever, and you go through that. That was by far a more pleasurable way to get the monuments knocked out in a timely fashion and learn a few things along the way without being on the big bus with 45 people.
Yeah, I've been by myself and was able to do a lot because I was on my own schedule. And I've been with Carson where it was super hot. And we walked the monuments and stuff, and it was just too much. He got tired. He got hot. And he was only 10. I'm not sure that he completely grasped, you know, the enormity of some of the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's some powerful things on the mall.
We kind of had that thought as I was talking to my wife and said, you know, at what age do you contemplate bringing a child? Because, I mean, look, no offense to anybody that did. I mean, everybody has their own whatever. But I saw a lot of, like, 2 and 3-year-olds, and I thought, there's no way, A, they're comfortable, and B, they understand anything they're looking at other than, hey, that's a really big building.
Yeah, well, they don't know the significance of some of the stuff. There's no way they could. Unless you've done one hell of a parenting job teaching American history to your toddler.
Flashcards every day since you were about a month old. Here we go.
Like Caroline's a sophomore this coming year, and this is the first year that she's taking a lot of U.S. history. I will be fascinated. If her history teacher is listening, this is not an insult at you. I'm just explaining to you that I will be fascinated to see what is emphasized in American history in today's era. Based on experiences that I've had with my oldest child, I have some suspicions. We'll see.
You think you know where they're going?
Yeah, I think I know where there's going to be some real emphasis. Okay. I think there's a certain... I'll shut up. I'll just say there have been a couple of times with our kids that we've had to explain to them that that's not really true. That's certainly not indicative of your ancestors. We've had to make that clear.
You know, I'll tell you the one that I had, again, I hadn't seen it in years and years and years. And there were a section of it, you know, the American History Museum. I think when a lot of people, because our tour guide pointed out, hey, I get asked so many times, where's the Smithsonian? And she's like, well, there's 37 or whatever it is. That's, you know, from a guy that left tons of money and they built multiple museums out of them. I think a lot of people think, though, in their minds, well, the American history is the one I'm talking about when I just say, where's the Smithsonian? And they have the gallery that's the America at War that is really, really cool. It's awesome. It's great. The presidential gallery is awesome. Otherwise, though, I was left a little with most of the rest of it. I think I could have hit those two galleries, moved on with my day, and been more than fine other than that. But just a little, again, a little personal preference there.
I wanted to see the original Declaration of Independence.
In the History of Archives building.
Yeah.
The National Archives,
and that's
building.
The one that I didn't get to that I wanted to go to.
And I think there's probably only two or three things in there that you care about. Declaration of Independence, the original, something from the Continental Congress or something, and some stuff like that.
Right. So
I was told that the Declaration of Independence, I believe, is the one that has been sun damaged. So there's not a whole lot. Like, it's very hard to read or see at this point.
Well, it's also got a map on the back that is
that's a good point.
It's got a map that takes you to a treasure.
That's true. I mean, Nicolas Cage pouring lemon juice on it probably didn't help at any point. But
it did help them solve the mystery.
But he said, yeah, that it was stored improperly, for lack of a better term, for years and years and years, and that has significantly damaged the document. So anyway, don't know.
You know, probably the Russians did that.
The Russians did that.
Yeah.
Full circle on today's Oxford Exxon podcast.
Yeah. Is that a Russia World Cup jacket you're wearing? What has happened with you? I mean, you go up to D.C. and hang out with the Trumps for 3 or 4 days, and next thing you know, you're hardcore.
It was funny. As soon as I posted that photo, like, even I even had some buddies that like started hazing me and heckling me and stuff, and it was all out of fun. But they, I got all the insults you would expect me to get over the 48 or 72 hours there.
I'm sure you did.
So, yeah, it was good.
Did you wear that jacket up there, or was it too warm?
Well, no, they gave it to me.
Oh, okay.
It was a gift.
Oh, that was a gift?
Yeah. Bribes, you know, real popular.
Right.
I'm kidding everybody.
Is that a hammer and sickle on this? Man, that's crazy.
That doesn't even exist anymore.
I'm looking at your jacket. I'm just telling you right now. I'd tweet out a picture of your attire today, but I think that would be the end of our business. And so I can't do it.
I mean, like I said, I had one person tweet at me immediately and say they've listened every day and they are no longer listening because Hogan was on the program.
Yeah.
It cracks me up because, you know, anybody knows him. I mean, I'm really being serious. Like, it sounds like such pandering and stuff, but he is truly an incredibly nice human being. And it's like, yeah, you're worked up over this, like over this guy.
Yeah.
Like, it's, come on. It is what it is. But anyway, up on the site today, 2 tons of recruiting, multiple commits over the last 24 hours or so. It seemed like every time I got off an airplane or got done traveling, I opened Twitter and there was somebody flipping or committing or something yesterday. Russell was all over that, so you got a lot of content at the site at rebelgrove.com for those things. Probably to close it, we're football season now, but I did do one small baseball piece this morning on 5 players who had good summers across the different summer leagues. Also, with a subscribers-only link, if you go to that story, you can link over to the message board where I point out some things that didn't go well for some players as well. So little bit for the free person, even though we'd love for you to subscribe, or the person that subscribes or is stealing content. You can find that at rebelgrove.com as well this morning.
Well, and before we close, I'm going to say a couple more advertisers to talk about in a minute as well, but some kudos to the Rivals Network here. We do. I know there's a couple people in the Rivals Network, one in particular that everybody despises, and it becomes almost a sweeping condemnation of everyone. Jonathan Mingo was in Atlanta for the 5-star challenge. I've posted this on the board, but if you're not a subscriber to rebelgrove.com and rivals.com and you're thinking about it, you should know this. He taped that video interview with Chad Simmons in Atlanta. I can't remember the exact date of that, but I want to say it was June 10th-ish.
I think it was weeks ago.
I mean, I want to say it was not even quite yet the middle of June, but I could be wrong. It could have been the 15th-ish of June. Rivals has sat on that for a month and a half minimum. Never leaked out. Russell knew about it. I knew about it. Obviously, Chad Simmons knew about it. The people who filmed it knew about it. And they all, to everyone's credit, no one even really hinted at it anywhere. That they knew exactly what he was doing. They were waiting for him to say, hey, I'm ready to make my decision public. And they waited on him. And we get a little criticism sometimes. It's playful, I think. But Russell's little thing is let the kid have his moment. And I get it. Sometimes that's journalistically that gets you beat. But it's the right thing to do. Just want to kudos to some people that did that. Let Jonathan Mingo make his own determination as to when he wanted to make that public, that he was committing to Ole Miss. That way, in the event that he somehow changed his mind over the last 6 weeks, or that maybe he delayed it, because I think originally they thought he was going to make that public within a week or two of the five-star challenge. And he, for whatever reason or reasons, I have absolutely no idea, waited until yesterday, and they made it public. So I know sometimes people don't agree with some of the rankings or some of that kind of thing, but there was a good bit of integrity that occurred right there. And that's pretty standard for, in my opinion, the majority of our network. Not everyone, but the majority.
No doubt. I mean, it's been an interesting summer because of just the high emotions, the way recruiting has gone, the way the season is leading up to, and different things. But Russell has done a lot of good work. Tries to keep the right things kind of at the head of the process and at the same time. So yeah, credit to him, because yesterday was a good payoff day. It was a good day for Ole Miss, but it also allowed Russell to run some content items that had been in our admin for a long time, waiting to be touched. Because I'll be honest, say about 2 weeks ago, because I don't know. Russell does a good job. It doesn't really matter. And I called Neil to talk about something else, and I said, who is this guy, and what is this doing in the admin still? And we just went, it's something Russell's done. I don't know. Just leave it there. Because anything not published is always at the very top, and it sits there. And over time, I was like, are we just waiting for a reason or what? And, yeah, so there was a reason. Yesterday was that reason. So.
And sometimes in recruiting coverage, and I'll be honest, this is the part that I don't miss. People are like, oh, you didn't like the work. That's not it. I don't mind working. I don't mind covering recruiting. The part of recruiting that, now that you've heard me every day for 8 years, you probably can imagine. The part of the recruiting that I don't really like is having to massage so many different elements, people. You've got, obviously, when you're covering a specific program, there are people inside that program that are reading what you write that don't always like some of your analysis, that want things out from a timing standpoint. You're covering the kids themselves, and they're 17-year-old kids. For the most part, and if you've ever been around 17-year-old kids, you know how moody and different and stuff they can be. These kids are just like those. They're just like your 17-year-old kid. They just happen to run fast. I mean, they're the same. They're wired the exact same way. They're not little football machines. And if anything, they're different than your 17-year-old kid because they've had their ass kissed for several years and they feel sort of entitled. Not across the board. There's some. And then you deal with handlers and the really slimy, gross. I'm trying to be nice. I'm trying to use words that don't just completely condemn them. So I'll stick with slimy and gross elements of recruiting.
Yeah.
People that are involved with these kids that don't necessarily have the kids' best interest at the forefront of their thoughts. There's something in it for them. And not necessarily just money and stuff. Just stuff. Ego. They want their back scratched. And those people, you have to deal with those people if you're going to cover recruiting well. And it's, if you're not wired that way at all, that's hard. And Russell does a really good job of that part of it.
Yeah, no, it takes a certain skill set to pull that off. There's no doubt about that. Before we go, I do want to tell you, we've been telling you about Tyson Drugs and G&M Pharmacy for a long time in Holly Springs and Oxford. Austin Crocker, one of their clinical pharmacists, doing a lot to combat the opioid epidemic that is going on across the country and in Mississippi, educating people on now an overdose reversal drug that actually in the Holly Springs area has already saved 5 lives from different first responders and medical personnel being aware of how to properly administer that. That is available at these places as well. So credit to them. Caring about the community and at G&M Pharmacy in Oxford. They deliver throughout the Oxford area. So, yeah, tons of stuff on the site at rebelgrove.com. Go ahead, Neil.
Let me tell you about Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, that's the place to go. It's just off Interstate 55 in Grenada, Mississippi. A complete selection of new and previously owned Nissans. Go in, test drive one today. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. I've been telling you about Robert Gambrell and Gambrell and Associates for a while. Robert knows that many of the people listening to this podcast will never need a bankruptcy attorney or a Social Security disability attorney. However, many of you may be interested in reviewing your financial situation to consider asset protection. It's a part of what a good bankruptcy attorney does. Many of your friends, relatives, they might get into difficult financial situations. Gambrell and Associates helps many people work through their times of hardship, whether that results in filing a bankruptcy petition or working to avoid a bankruptcy filing. Others are worried about their credit scores. For those people, we refer you to Brian McLaurin. He's another advertiser on this podcast. We'll tell you more about him tomorrow. Sometimes you just have to rebuild your credit quickly. Sometimes you have to tear it down. Whatever your needs are, your relatives, your friends can get a free consultation for 1 hour or more to help their decision on what is best for them. It's avvo.com. Search for Robert Gambrell or search for him on superlawyers.com. His number in Oxford, 662-281-8800.
So as I was saying, plenty of recruiting up at rebelgrove.com, some baseball, some football soon as well from Neil. Looking forward to fall camp, which begins tomorrow. We'll have coverage from that as well. Jeffrey will join us in the morning, I assume, and we'll continue with the podcast the rest of the week. So thanks for the short hiatus there. I'm going to be back, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.